It is Thursday the 23rd of February, and this is episode 108 of Digital Outbox. Welcome along to another episode. I am Chris, and I'm joined by Ian.
Good evening.
Good evening. How are we?
I'm all right.
I don't know why I said how we.
Exactly.
How are we doing? I've got a voice back after the last weekend. I was lucky enough to be at the cycling, and it was awesome in London.
It did look awesome.
I swear my voice is a little bit deeper right now, where it's still a bit strained. But it was very good, so I'm very glad.
I did see you on TV.
Did you? I was
the viewers properly can't see excited. That, but I have got fists in the air and given it an old, yay, Chris.
Yep, I was. My little grinning mug was on several times, looking like a cat got the mouse. Let's get on with some news. Let's start with some new privacy rights that have come in. After all the shenanigans we've had recently with contact details and all that kind of stuff going all over the place without users knowing, it looks like all the big companies have signed up to a deal which basically says that they will protect your rights of your data and make sure it's easy for the users to protect what happens to their data. Effectively, it sounds a bit like the Data Protection Act being enforced.
I think so. And I guess the problem is it's only just been announced, so we're never going to know until all the details come out. And this is also in America only at the moment. So this is a new consumer bill of rights. It's been announced tomorrow. And I guess the day before, they've been kind of pre-releasing a lot of the detail behind it.
This may be America only, but the stuff they're going to do will affect everyone.
Absolutely. It's basically forcing, or they've managed to get six major tech companies. So that's Amazon, Apple, Google, Microsoft, RIM and HP. They have all signed up to this, and it's basically users are going to be given the right to control when data is collected, how their personal data is used and shared, avoid having information collected in one context and used for another purpose, which I'm sure must hurt Google's all-encompassing new privacy policy.
If that privacy policy says that we're going to use your data everywhere, I assume that covers it.
I just don't know. A lot of these things, you read it and I still don't get it.
To 103 privacy policies for Google then.
Have data held securely and to know who is accountable for the misuse of the data. And these, I guess when you read through it, it all makes common sense, but a lot of us blindly give away our information without really thinking happening.
All of this sounds like stuff you might expect is happening anyway with your data, and probably in a large majority of cases is happening. I guess that these companies are getting a bit nipped around the edges, where people keep biting them for these little things that keep going on. And also, they can't hide things anymore. There's enough geekiness going on out there that people discover when things are going on that aren't supposed to be going on.
Absolutely. I mean, Google seems to be under most pressure at the moment.
I think there's weird concerted effort going on against Google at the moment in there.
I don't know if it's just if they've had too much of a good run. You know, they've had years and years, and I think they are such a big beast. I think any big beast eventually comes slightly unstuck. You know, Microsoft had years and years and years of probably what people thought were antitrust, and eventually, you know, there was enough to, you know, to force the US government into doing something, and then the Europeans
enough to force them into decline.
but that's been for years. It went unchallenged. There's a whole load of examples where they forced PC manufacturers, you know, to bundle Windows, and that went on, and everybody knew about it. You know, and I think it's the same. I mean, Apple's under pressure. Google's under a lot of pressure at the moment. There seemed to be a whole hoo-ha around this mobile Safari workaround that Google had put in place. And now people are turning the tables and saying, well, actually, it's Apple with this by default disabling cookies. And most people don't realise that cookies aren't enabled on the browser and iOS.
It's not that cookies aren't enabled. It's third-party cookies.
Sorry.
So that's a code from another website. If you're viewing domain1.com and you've got content coming in from domain2.com, that content from domain2.com cannot put cookies on your domain, your system by default in Safari. Safari is the only browser that does that. Everyone else lets you do it. And it fundamentally breaks Safari for multiple uses, legitimate uses as well. Now, I guess it's also they're trying to stop nefarious use of that. But I tell you, every single website that you visit will be using this workaround for Safari.
Oh no, absolutely. But I mean, well, not every single. I mean, the workaround that Google were using was invisibly posting a form and an iframe in the background.
That is the only workaround that works, and everyone is using it. So every single Facebook
not everybody's using it. I mean, Google have turned around and said we've stopped using it.
So that will mean that their plus one buttons are now broken, and they won't be able to use plus one buttons.
And that's a really strange thing. If it wasn't, because a lot of people have come out and says, well, it's not that bad. Why did Google, as soon as it was revealed, said, oops, we'll stop doing that right now?
Just because it's bad press and they're trying to avoid it. Yeah. Anyway, basically, if they do shut down this loophole that's in there already, then Facebook apps won't work anymore because they definitely use it. Twitter apps won't work anymore because they definitely use it. And many, many other things which people come to expect nowadays just wouldn't work.
Yes, and that's why I think there's a deeper story there. It's not just Google were doing something sneaky. It's like they had to do it. And it's why is this disabled by default? Because certainly, I mean, it doesn't pop up when you first launch Safari and say, this is what we've done to help protect your security. Do you want to enable it? You know, and if it did that, I would be like, well, I'd be quite comfortable. The fact that there's never any mention of security at all is quite sneaky on Apple's part.
The real issue was that by having this, it wasn't so much, they put this in place for their plus one button, but it had the side effect of then enabling their site because their site by default puts tracking cookies on your computer. That's what it does. So it enabled them to actually be put onto the system by getting this workaround. So that it was like a third-party add-on effect that they said they hadn't thought about when they put this workaround in place, which I can kind of understand, anyway, so that's the situation. That's why they got in trouble, because it was to do with these tracking cookies, not because they wanted to work around just so they could get their plus one buttons working.
Yes.
Anyway.
So... I actually think this all looks really healthy. You know, the more we understand about it, the more the more we should be in control.
I agree, but I'm on my maintaining my path of not caring less at the moment. So one day that'll come back to haunt me, I'm sure. Google, in better news, in kind of funky geeky news, they're going to make real world Google goggles. So effectively. These are going to be little devices which are designed to be used just in front of the eyes and effectively add sort of virtual reality layers over the top of it's augmented reality, isn't it, what they call it, so wherever you're looking. They're not designed to be worn for very long, but they reckon that some geeks will probably wear them all the time. I just see Terminator vision.
Now, for the second week in a row, I have read a story and thought, this is a spoof. April the 1st is the UK April Fools, and in America it's like, you know, February the 22nd, because this is bizarro stuff.
It's rocks.
Well, it was Mountain Lion last week, because the first post I saw on Mountain Lion, I was like, right, who's been at the drugs? And then of course you see everybody talk about it, and I was like, oh my God, it's true. And this is another one. And this is
podcasts have reported it, so we're safe, surely, right?
Well, the thing is, it's the New York Times that has reported this. And it's, you know,
it's the next step. It's logical, you know. You can get little screens, and you can overlay what you're looking at.
But people said that about 3D glasses and TV, and it didn't work. I mean,
Nick Belton.
So it's Nick Belton that's done the report on this. Seemingly been in development for quite a while. They've quoted a couple of prices, similar to smartphone prices, which makes me think it's like $250, and you'll be paying for your 3G. Or $600, and who knows, you'll just sort out your own 3G. I'm sure there's something like that. I wear glasses all the time. I know you don't. You are perfect vision, man. But I, I,
My super name, my Superman name.
Exactly. You can put that in your, you can put that on your kit room next year. Perfect Vision Man. But the, I just, I don't know. There's just something about this. It's just, it really appeals to the geek in me. And at the same time, I'm like, what?
I just, all I saw was Terminator Vision and RoboCop Vision.
Oh, I don't know.
Information about the person you're looking at.
What's this thing? Are you going to be walking down the street and it's like, you know, I don't know.
Let me get my goggles out.
Well, you put these on and it's like, you know, like rapist, murderer pops up above people's heads. Yeah. Maybe that's just in Glasgow. Maybe that's how many crimes he's done in the last year.
But the fact they're going down this technological route though is intriguing.
Did you not? Come on, you must have chuckled about the unique navigation system. The navigation system currently used is a head tilting to scroll and click. And instantly I'm
thinking, not only are you going to have people talking to themselves on their Bluetooth headset, you're going to have people with nervous tics.
Well, it's like a man with Tourette's having a tic, walking down the street, staring at
you'd
people.
You'd certainly walk across. In fact, you'd probably cross to the side where all the people are asking for your opinion on things with their clipboards. So doesn't looks like this is going to happen. So interesting. Anyway, let's watch that.
I loved was about the navigation. It becomes second nature and almost indistinguishable to outside users. So okay, there's 20 people walking down the street and there's these other 10 all wearing glasses, looking like the Oakley. What was the Oakley big
thing? The MP3 ones.
What were they?
I can't remember what they were. You know that these are not going to look like lightweight glasses to start with. they're going to be proper.
Thump.
Proper
was it the Oakley Thump?
Oh, I can't remember.
Oh, I'm Googling. Don't let me down. It was the Oakley Thump.
Only sports people wore them I ever saw. Been sponsored to wear them.
Only people paid enough.
Yeah, exactly. You have to pay fair amount. Pirate Bay looked like they might be blocked in the UK.
And I know I'm jumping. Would you buy some if they came out?
Oh, let's wait until they come out before I say anything. I don't know.
Assuming the Oakley Thump and it's going to be a couple of hundred quid.
To be honest, to start with, it's just going to be the layers that you can already get and they're not interesting me right now. You know, this is a restaurant. When I can have Terminator Vision or RoboCop Vision, that's when they become interesting.
Face detection. Names popping up above the head. This is Chris. I am Chris. Sweeper. A little tweet above me with my last tweet.
See, I like it. Can you just see? Brilliant. What I also thought, you know that virtual reality game they used to play in cities and towns? They may still do it. The virtual Pac-Man, where one person is Pac-Man, and there's about four or five different ghosts, and they're chasing each other around the city, but you can't tell who's who unless you've got the.
Is this one of those crazy
reality
gadget show?
Yeah, episodes. I think I saw it. I think it was in Japan that they were doing it. It was quite funky. So there was people running across roads chased by ghosts. Yeah, it's wonderful. Pirate Bay could be blocked in the UK. This doesn't really come as a surprise, I guess. I assume that that's going to have to be via DNS records. We're seeing this more and more. I can't see how else they can block it.
No, and I think people are saying already, what a waste of time. They'll just move it to a different domain, and they're also moving away from actual torrent files to magnet links, which just point to URLs. So it always seems a bit pointless.
There's obviously people still moaning that the Pirate Bay is still there, and I think they're being closely watched, but I guess they can't close them down because they're now a non-entity almost. They're that kind of, where they were something before, they're now disappeared into the backwaters.
I'm amazed, actually. I've seen a few tweets from people this week that I follow bemoaning the amount of music sites that have been shut down.
So it's more and more. It seems to be.
I am surprised.
Actively being shut down.
Yeah,
yes.
I've been speaking to a couple of people, work colleagues that have said, "Oh, it's difficult to find things now," and I'm like, "What do you mean?"
Also, if you visit some sites now,
we're getting really vague. If you visit some sites.
No. There was, I think it was that R&B site that got taken down with that message that comes up now instead of, I can't remember the exact message now, but But effectively, they're not going down the privacy or piracy rules, but they are telling you that they've taken down your IP address because you're by visiting the site, they're saying there's an intent to commit fraud, which is a criminal offence, which comes with 10 years in jail.
Yeah, I've just been
unlimited files.
All it says now is Soka is taking control of this domain. For further information, visit soka.gov.uk.
Okay, so just be aware that they're now taking down IP addresses of people, and say there is a criminal act that they're going to potentially enact. It's there to scare you. Oatmeal on piracy. So this is something you picked up on.
Yeah, this did the rounds. There's been a few posts this week. I don't know if it's just the usual kind of hive mind of bloggers. You know, one of the bloggers posts up a good take on piracy, and the others, you know, respond in return. And the Oatmeal put up this comic about Game of Thrones. Now, in the UK, Game of Thrones has only been on Sky Atlantic, and I think that's the only place you can see it. In America, it was much the same. That I think it was only on HBO. And you couldn't see it via any streaming service. You can't buy it on DVD. You can't get it via Netflix. So they put up a little comic of, I want to give you money, and I'll go to all my possible options. I'll go to iTunes. I'll go to the shops. I'll go everywhere. I can't get it. Okay, I'll just torrent it. And I think that has been most people's complaint this week, that if a company makes it so hard for me to actually spend money to watch something, if I can't do it, you know, I want to do it and I can't, I will just go and find that other route.
Because the only route in the only route into watching it is to have a full-on cable subscription, which comes with a whole load of junk which you don't want, including the thing you do want, but you have to pay extra for that. And that's the whole concept, is that you have to get channeled into these routes, and that's why they've done it. Yet it makes it seemingly for a modern-day consumer just impossible to get hold of.
Yes,
if you're living in a house with, you know, where the cable doesn't exist or Sky doesn't exist, and whoever pays the bills isn't willing to pay for it, how do you get hold of these things? Well, you can't. So that's the angle. There's people out there. There is a market out there of people who want to spend money who can't do it.
And I agreed with it. I mean, the way Oatmeal put it, I thought was excellent. And I really should link to some of the other blog posts that made very good points, the similar ones. But the one that took a slightly different view, and actually I kind of agreed, was from Andy Anelko. He put up a fairly long post, but one quote: the single least attractive attribute of many of the people who download content illegally is their smug sense of entitlement. And I'm kind of seeing that. It kind of ties back to the, you know, people saying, oh, all these music sites have gone. You mean iTunes? You know, in HMV and Amazon.
Yeah.
You know, and I did say that to one guy through the week, and he was like, you cock.
Yeah, I mean,
you know exactly what I mean.
our angle is very much, why can't I get this content where I want it and why I want how I want it and all those kind of things. But you're right. There's no reason that we should have the content that we want in the way we want, other than the fact there's money there that wants to be spent, and it's not being spent because it's not available.
Yes.
Basically. Nightline visits Foxconn. Foxconn, the company who put the iPads and iPhones together for Apple.
Yes.
There's still a whole load of shebang about working conditions over and how bad Apple are for using this company and this factory.
And much like Google's getting a hard time over the privacy side, and they seem to be picking up most of the flack. I mean, Path got away with murder. They got a lot of flack and they just dealt with it, and it was like, oh, okay, well done, Path. But Google's just seems to be on and on. It's the Apple. I mean, I guess 2-3 weeks ago I was saying all this stuff about Apple, and it's, you know, and how the factoring conditions are terrible. It's almost like journalists trying to make the stories, but it is sticking. So Apple.
Well, of course, it is, because they make so much money.
Exactly. So,
they make a lot of that money because the cost of them putting an iPad together and iPod is cheap.
Yes. So Apple basically said to ABC, go to Foxconn, and Foxconn themselves are more than happy for them to have full access to everything. There was a half-hour program. I don't think too much was found out. I think people were maybe quite surprised that there wasn't some damning evidence that came out. The Verge did a good job of just highlighting, you know, what they thought were the main points. And some of it was, I guess it's quite interesting, 141 steps to make an iPhone, and they're all handmade. You know, so they actually I would have thought,
considering I know they're not 100% reliable, but they're pretty reliable.
Yeah.
It is surprising that they're put together by hand.
Absolutely. One iPad takes 5 days and 325 hands. It's amazing. I just did not expect that at all. But then there was some, it's how much, so it's workers are making $1.78 an hour. It's fairly low.
When you dig in, the problem is that we compare apples with apples, but you've got to compare with other factories that are in the same region or whatever to find out whether that's good or bad. But at the end of the day, that is a big reason why they're being made over there and not over here. But that is a shockingly low amount of money.
Yeah. And there were some other points. And if you see some of the video, all the buildings at Foxconn now have suicide nets around them, which is fairly grim. Mm. And I know they're focused on suicide before, and the suicide rate at Foxconn is less than, the rate in China. But it's still, you still look at it and think, oh, it does look a fairly grim place to work. But we need to remember, it's not just Apple there. There's a whole lot of other companies use Foxconn to assemble their goods, and they're no better or worse than other places. It's just
But Apple make more money. There you go.
Absolutely.
That's why they're more known. 4G rollout. We've got a couple of stories on that. First one is that turns out that about a million TV users will need to have filters installed in order to cut down on interference. Apparently the new band will affect some households more than others. Adding filters to these TVs is going to cost about £108 million. I guess to stop fuzz.
Yeah. That's a good way of putting it. I just can't believe that. We've just went through all the kind of digital switchover up here. Again, I know it's still to finish off down in England, but...
Yeah, we're still going through it.
It caused quite a bit of pain, the amount of aerials needed changes, and some of the older Freeview boxes didn't really work too well. And it was all quite... see, for like older folk, I just want to watch telly. I don't get all this.
And where's the EastEnders?
Exactly. And now there's so I think it's they're saying there's almost a million are going to need these filters, which whoever actually wins the auction of the 4G signals or the 4G spectrum later this year, they will have to pay for this as well. So that's going to be another cost that they need to absorb.
Yeah, in the grand scheme of things, though, 100, I know it's a lot of money,
but it's not a
great deal of money.
No, there's ones I feel sorry for. So, if you're one of these 1 million, it seems like some little filter that you'll put in, and once you put that, it's fine, and you don't need the help of an engineer. But if you're over 75 or disabled, you will get assistance. There's a smaller number, about 10,000, that will need to switch to satellite or cable. There's just no other choice. And that's a bit of an inconvenience, And
if you didn't want to pay for cable or satellite, yeah. For sure, yeah. Absolutely.
And again, they're going to pay for that, but they're not going to pay for it forever. And I'm sure a lot of people probably don't have satellite, aesthetics. I don't want a dish, and they don't have the choice.
Some people's mortgages and local orders and stuff don't let them have dishes.
Absolutely. If I'm in a listed house, I don't know if it's classed as the same down south, but up here, if I'm in a listed building, I have very limited options
on what you can do. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. But then there's around 500 homes who can't receive satellite or cable, and they'll just get 10 grand to find a solution.
No, I don't feel sorry for these people, but it says, but it does say up to 10 grand. And basically that is to be put towards, I guess, tunneling a fiber cable into their house so they can get it.
Is that a Virgin? Yeah. How do you fancy?
I can't. I might just get an order put on my house. I can't have a dish. No, not got cable. I want 10 grand. but anyway, interesting that they're already planning this ahead. And I wonder how they define what interference and what a level of interference is considered to be a pest. Because it'd be awful if you're on that kind of border of what they considered, it's just a bit fuzzy.
Well, I'm sure there'll be that old postcode lottery. That without all these people within this radius or in this postcode, but yeah, then the one next door, you're in a different postcode, you don't get a filter. Yeah. And I think you're going to see quite a bit. Already, the first estimate was about, I think it was about 650,000 to 700,000 people, and that's already been upped to 900,000. I'm sure we'll see that figure change again. It'll be a lot more people.
Having said that, it does seem like it's a £10 filter, so it's not going to break the bank. It's just going to be a bit annoying. But so keeping on that 4G bandwagon then. So Everything Everywhere have announced that they would quite like to start their 4G network off. So basically at the moment, they're still in massive discussions, generally speaking, about 4G in this country. They're still trying to sell off the band that's needed. But Everything Everywhere would like to use part of their existing phone network, part of their 3G network, to turn that on to being 4G. And it's being looked at by Ofcom at the moment, whether they yes. will allow it to happen.
So they don't need to, as you said, they don't need to wait for the auction, because they, due to the merger, they have so much spectrum or free bandwidth or available bandwidth. They reckon they can, in some areas, so it wouldn't be across the whole country, but in some areas, convert 3G to 4G and still provide a full 3G service and a separate 4G on top. So they have submitted to Ofcom already for
yes.
approval.
They have, and Ofcom has said they're considering it and whether it happened. Now, before everyone gets too excited, we don't have any 4G phones over here. So you'd have... They're talking about dongles. So, you know, remote access dongles rather than phones. But I guess phones will follow if they're allowed to do this. It'd be a pretty big string to their bow to say that they've got the first 4G network. Now...
Well, if they can have the first 4G network by a year or a year and a half, that is a... big market.
Yeah, ahead of everyone else being able to do the same thing. Yes, it's a big much. But so what's happened in America is that definition of 4G has been loose and woolly. People have called different things 4G, things that vary quite a lot. I guess in the same way that our broadband varies from very, very slow in some areas to extremely fast in others. Same with 4G. So it's going to be, I'd be more interested in seeing that whatever they class as 4G, and the technology they end up using for 4G is consistent across manufacturers so that we have a consistent handset that works on 4G. That's what I'd like to see. And I'd like whether this is going to cause confusion on that front, I don't know, because whether that's been agreed upon yet, I don't know.
Well, it's definitely causing confusion in America. There's lots of people banding that they do have 4G, and it's quite clear they don't.
BT still advertising their super, super fast broadband, which is their up to 8 meg broadband. When, you know, you're already getting 50, 100 meg broadband, it's, you know, similar things. So there's people out there saying we've got 4G networks in America where they're just a little bit faster than our old 3G. Sky Go, they're releasing on Android. Whoop, whoop.
I think that's the story, isn't it?
Yeah, pretty much. So basically the app that has been on iOS so far is coming to Android. So it labels you to watch your Sky TV over, whether it's over at 3G, I don't know. It doesn't say here.
Yes, it is.
Okay, so you can watch your TV on the go. Obviously the TV channels that you get depend on your subscription package. But another way to do it, you can authorize two applications to watch your Sky Go account on. But they're not including tablets at the moment.
No.
It is only for smartphones, small smartphones. And a limited number of smartphones to start with are officially supported.
Yes. But it's still good to see, because it's been out on iOS for quite a while. And I love it. I absolutely love it, because it's the 22 Sky channels plus also Anytime Plus. So there's actually quite a wide variety of content to watch at any one time.
There you go. Excellent.
Very good.
Another app that Dave talked about. Is the Formula One app?
Yes,
you got quite excited by this.
I'm. It's one of these things. I'm sure. See, if you've not got Sky Sports, you've not got Sky HD, you're probably sitting there cursing the fact that Sky have managed to get, you know, F1. And
yes,
I can understand that, and at the same time, I can understand how much F1 costs. And the BBC had a hard challenge last year. You know, it's like it funds.
I'm still bitter though.
Yeah, I'm a bit. I mean, it's
Well, I'm going to have to spend 100. Don't tell Sky, because I haven't subscribed yet. But I'm going to have to spend a minimum of 120 quid to just watch Formula One for the season.
Yeah, but it's a minority elitist sport, so get used to it. Oh, that's controversial. There you go. I got a bite.
Biggest spectator sport beyond the World Cup. Certainly the biggest regular one. Anyway.
But they're also bringing, I mean, Sky said it would be years of the app, and they're bringing out a Formula One app as well. So that'll have four view split screen type nonsense on your iPad. Which sounds lovely.
So this has really shown my sadness. Through last year, I would watch the Grand Prix with the onboard footage on the laptop and the lap screen, the screen up showing all where the positions are and stuff.
There's nothing wrong with that.
Definitely geeky though. Vita. Vita's been launched. It's PlayStation Vita, so they're handheld. Handheld for the... probably for a decade ago. Anyway, the technology in it looks pretty special. Two analog sticks, touchscreen, and also a rear touchpad. Pretty much, you know, all the kind of things that you might expect in a modern day smart gadget. Apart from it's not a phone, basically. But it's an old, it's on the old model. It's an expensive bit of hardware, so it's going to cost you in excess of 200 quid. So is it 230 non-3G?
Amazon are doing it for 210. I think somebody actually went down to 200 for launch yesterday. So 200 for the Wi-Fi model and 260 for the 3G.
Yeah, so an expensive bit of kit. Now, just to put it in line, that PlayStation 3 only costs about that much for the full kit and caboodle. Games going to cost between effectively 30 and 40 quid. So yeah. Full-size console style. Size.
So, I mean, we checked this out just before we came on air and came on air. Who am I talking to? what a knob. But the Uncharted is up at like 38 quid on Amazon.
Yeah.
That's
Uncharted, I think, is the only release title that's actually got relatively good scores.
Wipeout.
Has that got good scores? Resell that bad boy. It's like, reselling
got,
Star Wars.
I've got a love for Wipeout.
Yeah, I know. You buy it over and over again.
Very much.
So anyway, it's not... It's something, I'd like to try out and I'd like to hold. I just don't want to own one.
No.
Any handheld that I've ever owned, I've used it for, I don't know, a month at most, really, and that's it.
Yeah, I remember getting the... I got the PSP imported from Hong Kong and it was gorgeous. Screen was gorgeous. The hardware was lovely. I'd used it a few times. I guess it was before the iPhone really took off.
Yeah, so you could use it for media, and that was quite normal back then.
And even on the plane, I remember some cracking game sessions on the plane. You know, just because me and one of my mates had it, and you could multiplayer, and it worked really well. But as soon as the iPhone really came out, it was dead. It was, and I know the games aren't the same. I know you can get a lot more, and I guess it's the thing. The Vita's come out, the hardware blows everything out. See if you look at tablets and if you look at phones, you know, it's obviously this dedicated hardware and it's going to outperform it drastically. But in 4 years' time, I reckon phones and tablets will be outperforming it. And I really do think this is the last, I think this is the last dedicated handheld that's going to come out.
I think it might well be. I think cocky's not the word. They're quite adamant that what they can do with these games is far, far in excess of what you can do in a cheap mobile app. But, you know, in reality, that's just about development schedule and model, basically. So they're spending an awful lot of money developing games. But those games, they're in a smaller market and therefore those games are more expensive. You can develop a pretty special game for a phone in the knowledge that it's going to get exposed to an awful lot of people and therefore you can sell it cheaper. I was looking at the App Store. They've got this countdown to, is it 25 billion downloads or something?
Yeah, yeah.
Or count up to it. And thousands of apps are sold every second. It's ridiculous when you watch it. It's just absolutely palmy.
Android store is more popular than that one now?
It's not phenomenal. Churning over much money, but it's more tick over yet.
Yeah.
Just absolutely barmy. I think they're just 5 years too late. It's funny that Sony seem to be, I mean, we could all be surprised. I don't think we're going to be, but they just seem to be, with the PlayStation 3, they were a year behind Xbox. And with this new handheld, they seem about 2-3 years late with it.
And as you said, the big thing is it's like you've got this great hardware. How could you not have put a phone in? You know, because would it have changed it that much? And even just, you know, you've got 3G there. It just seems like it's got everything but that last bit. And then you would have had a platform for everything. I don't know.
We'll, I like the idea of that rear touchpad. I think we talked about this before a while ago, where your fingers just get in the way on the front touchpad. It's ridiculous. That's one of the limitations of this touch interface, is that you're just blocking what you can actually see. Yep. So having a rear touchpad would mean that those stupid finger controls that you have in, you know, racing games and stuff actually would make more sense, because you can actually see what the heck you're looking at. But yeah, so I love that idea. I think that'll catch on, actually. I think it'll get used elsewhere.
I'd love to, you know, use it for, you know, 2-3 days and then think, yeah, this is great. I don't want to own it. I don't want another proprietary. It's another bloody proprietary disc format.
There's a lot of hidden costs here, you know, whether it be your 3G connection, if you want that, or the memory cards, which are proprietary, so they're not based on default.
Nope, 16 gig, you know, memory card, £40.
Because the pirates are bad, man.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. Oh, and there's Ridge Racer. You can never have a game launch without Ridge Racer.
Of course you can't. Not on the Sony network. Picks then. I think we're going to raise the bar with picks this week, seeing as I haven't got one and Ian's one doesn't exist yet.
No, I need to quantify that, just because one of your picks didn't exist.
Yeah, mine totally really didn't exist, but yours also really doesn't exist.
No, but it does. I'm going to direct you to a website that exists. So my pick this week is Matter. So if you go to readmatter.com, and that will take you to the links you need to go to. And this is a couple of journalists have launched this, so it's another Kickstarter campaign, and it's Jim Giles and Bobby Johnson. And if you've read The Guardian, Wired, Gigaom, you'll know Bobby Johnson, or even from the old blogging days from 10 years ago, he was a prominent blogger as well. So Jim Giles written for Nature, The Atlantic, The Economist, New Scientist, and what they're launching with Matter is they're fed up with journalism, fed up with the way it is. If you look at a lot of the tech websites just now, all it is a press release with a couple of paragraphs of comment, and there's a rush to be there first. It's link bait. It's get it out there first. Don't worry about the facts. Don't do the research. Don't do the long form stories that take time. You know, so proper journalism is what they're talking about. And with Matter, what they're trying to do is launch a one story a week format that you pay for. And it'll be interesting to see whether it works. And to launch it, they're looking for people to pledge money. So they're looking for $50,000 to be raised over the next 30 days. It was launched yesterday on Kickstarter.
And I looked yesterday evening and they had got up to $16,000.
Yep, at the start of this podcast, they were at $37,000. At the end of it, they're at $38,760.
So they're going to be there in a couple of days. And
yeah, and I just think, you know, if you look at some of the longer stories, you know, so if you look at, good grief, I'm trying to, longreads.com, you know, posts a lot of links that I usually end up in Instapaper for me. Some of these, you know, stories that are, you know, Wired length, you know, that have taken a lot of research, talked to a lot of sources, put a lot of time and effort into it. It's that kind of experience that they're promising. And I think just because I don't know Jim Giles that well, maybe I've read something, but I've certainly read a lot of Bobby Johnson's content, and I just think this is worthwhile following. I think it's something different and it's something to support. So if you're interested...
I was going to say, as ever with Kickstarter, there's lots of different levels of support, from $10 right up to, you know, however much you want to put in, basically. But it sounds like a nice, refreshing change, actually, to journalism. Anyway, that is our podcast. If you want to find out more about us, you can online, www.digitaloutbox.com. We're on email, info@digitaloutbox.com, and Twitter and Skype as Digital Outbox. If you want to find out more about Ian, where can we do that?
My blog is iand.net, and I'm on Twitter as Shweepa.
And I'm on Twitter as GZUK, and I do have a blog, chrishutchinson.org.uk. That's it for this week, and we'll speak to you next week. Cheers. Bye-bye.
Bye. Here's the thing, if your Twitter name is above your head every time you walk around with somebody wearing Google goggles, would you change it?
No, absolutely not. I'm known by more people as Cheesy than I am as Chris.
Hey, so I've heard.
There you go. I'm even considering having my car wrapped with cheese emblems.
Are you?
Yep. Proper Forza stuff.
I thought you were going to start talking about tattoos there, and I was like, oh no, this is getting serious.
Not getting that far. I'm too chicken for that kind of stuff.
Check my EDAM out.